Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Studios for February 4th, 2020. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here today to review the Australian Open. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
Well, how's it going down there?
Or up it's going there, good. Yeah, it's going well, you know. Still in the middle of winter here, but not too much snow, thankfully, and just finished up the first Grand Slam of the season with Sofia Kenin winning her maiden major title over Garbine Muguruza, and Novak Djokovic winning his 17th overall major title and 8th Australian Open over Dominic Thiem in 5 sets, which I think we called 5 sets, but we had Medvedev over there, and he lost in the 4th round to Wawrinka, so that didn't turn out too well for us. So, Parsa, what are your overall takeaways from this event? I mean, let's start with on the women's side. We had Sofia Kenin winning, as I mentioned, her maiden slam. Took out Muguruza in 3 sets after losing the first set. It was like 4-6, 2-2. Feisty individual, you know, like, obviously we had followed her last year. I know she did pretty good at the Rogers Cup, and she was in and out and building up her ranking, coming in as the 14th ranked player. I think she's up to like 7 or 8 now, and you know, 5'7", can take the ball pretty early, doesn't have the biggest serve, but really believes in herself, very, very competitive. Obviously had a great, you know, streak there down under. What are your thoughts? What are your takeaways?
She's been a young up-and-coming American. I mean, I remember her winning the national championships in the juniors, and she's just has that unique ability to find a way. She thinks on the court. She adjusts on the court. She strategizes. At the same time, you can see she's temperamental and holding her emotions in check. There's a lot going on in that girl. You know, there's just quite a bit of intensity there. And, you know, when it all gets steered into the right direction, you can see what she's going to do. And I only think she's going to improve. She hasn't stopped improving since she was a kid. And that's like a very big sign, you know, and that tells you that for the rest of her career, she's going to continue to get better because she's got the right work ethic. She understands how to go about things. And as long as she doesn't get muddled by the fame, she's in a very good position to be at the top of the game for a very long time. And, you know, she reminds me a lot of someone like a modern day Hingis. You know, Hingis had better hands and manipulation of the ball, but Kenin moves better, I think, is a little bit grittier and tougher. And for the current court surface, the way that it is, the hands are less, you know, applicable versus right now it's much better to have strong trunk and hips and legs and be able to fight and have these long rallies and be able to take the ball early and play defensively at the same time and change direction, change speeds, do all those kinds of things. And she possesses all of those tools, and she's willing to work on the things that she's not good at. So I think you've got a budding superstar here, Nima.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, you never really know. I mean, Muguruza was. We even talked about it in the pre-tournament show where he was like, "Where was she? Where has she been?" And then she just goes on a tear. You know, Tunes Svitolina. I mean, beats a lot of good players, and then she's in the finals with a chance of now holding 3 of the 4 majors, previously winning the French Open and Wimbledon. And it's like, you know, what's going on here? And then she was very. I mean, one set away, right? You know, I think it was like 2-all and then or whatever, 1-all and then a few games out, and it didn't work out for her. But, you know, women's tennis is definitely up and down. We've had like how many different winners now in the last little bit, right? I think Osaka's been the only one that won a couple in a row, but Serena obviously hasn't won one in a while. She lost early, which, I mean, is I don't know what we can really think about that. Sharapova, again, losing first round. like you said, do we really have to talk about her? I mean, she's pretty much done for me. I mean, beyond done. I think I don't know if she's doing a farewell tour. She kind of even said, though, in her post-match press conference that, you know, this, I don't know if I'll be back next year. And I think she kind of knows, because how many more first rounds are you going to win? How many more times is your agent going to say, listen, like, what are we doing here, right? We have a brand, and, you know, you're not, unfortunately, you don't, it's just not possible. It's not that you can't play tennis. It's that, you know, your body's let you down, and this has happened, and whatever, and, you know, stuff from the past. But it's interesting. I think it'll be an interesting year with Kennan. I mean, she doesn't have the physicality necessarily that you want to see, but neither does Halep, right? And she's been number one. And I think Kennan's only going to go forward. I mean, she's got the momentum. I'd like to see really what happens when Andreescu comes back. I think she's playing in the Middle East. I know she's doing Fed Cup, I think, this weekend. And then I think she's playing Dubai and, I'm not sure, Doha. So let's see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting times, and it's exciting. I think it's nice to see an American player doing well. It's obviously good for that economy and that market. But I mean, what do you think about Serena? I mean, what can we, you know, see from her? She's going to keep trying. I think go limited schedule. You know, she's going to play, what, maybe 8 events this year, all the majors, maybe Olympics, maybe like a Toronto. I don't know. I'm not sure. She probably won't play after the U.S. Open as she usually does. So it's not too bad, right? I mean, it's like she gets about 4 months off at the end of the year. And then I'm not sure when she's going to play again. Probably won't see her in February. And we'll probably see her back for maybe Indian Wells in Miami. Maybe one clay event. So it's not too bad. But it's like, what does she need to do? Because I thought she was fitter. She won a tournament coming in. And then she goes down inexplicably in the third round to an unheralded opponent, right? So what were your thoughts on that?
You know, with Serena, it's something that, you know, is an ever-moving process. She's going to have to feel right. We're seeing it with the men on the men's tour. You know, the older you get with Federer, it's a little bit more fickle. The draw has to work out. He's got to, you know, be able to put the big player that everyone thought is going to be a problem away in straight sets and play incredible level, incredible tennis. And that's where Serena's got to get to in order to win a slam. It's clear. And that's it, Nima. I mean, this is an elite athlete at the end of her career. Just like we're seeing with Federer, it's the same thing now with Serena. I think she's a threat any time she steps on the court. I wouldn't want to play Serena Williams. But at that same token, she's got to win 7 in 2 weeks in order to win a slam. And so I think that that's ultimately going to be a challenge. But she's very, very capable. All she needs is to be on for 2 weeks. And I think good things can happen for her.
Okay. So we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, February is a bit of a crapshoot month. You got a lot of events. Like ATP basically has like 3 events a week every week. So it's going to be a lot of, you know, those first-time champions. Got a lot of guys from South America. It's going to be, you know, you got the New York Open in your backyard. You got Rotterdam. You got Dubai. Acapulco is a pretty big event at the end of the year. Women have, you know, Dubai, Doha. Those are going to be big ones. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of action still, but doesn't really get the media coverage because it's right after a slam. And, I mean, pretty much until you go to the BNP Paribas Open and then Miami Open, March is pretty crazy. So I think that's kind of what we're building up to. Shifting gears now to the men's side, we had Djokovic, you know, overcoming a 2-1 deficit against Dominic Thiem to roar back and win his 8th title down under. He moves him to 17, 2 behind Nadal in the overall total, and 3 behind Federer at 20. So makes it obviously ever interesting. Parsa, for me, I mean, I think Thiem played well. I mean, those frosted tips he's got in his hair now, the highlights, I think they served him well in the down under. He's looking good. Very impressed with Thiem. I mean, he beat Rafa in a tough match, proved that, you know, he can outlast one of the biggest grinders ever. He totally deserved that. He beat Zverev, who had, I mean, listen, I thought he was going to lose first round, and I think he kind of said the same thing. But lo and behold, the guy makes the semifinals. Nice, you know, gesture of donating the $50,000 to the bushfires. And then he goes up against Djokovic, loses the first set, but wins the next 2, and then loses like 3 and 4, which was kind of disappointing in a way which I thought he could at least maybe extend into some breakers. But it was a strange match, right? I mean, you know, Djokovic all of a sudden losing energy, can't serve his big, and then he takes the medical timeout, comes back, and then he's ready to go, and then, you know, the experience shines through. So what do you think of that match overall? And then what do you think about what you saw from Team and then Djokovic?
So Team is definitely banging on the door. I think you can see that he is going to be probably the next Grand Slam champion other than the big, I can't say big three, but I guess big two, big three, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
He's definitely the next in line, if not here at Roland Garros. He's Federer's best chance at holding the 20 slam title. Someone's got to beat Nadal on clay. I don't know if he can do it, but
he's the only guy, really.
He's the only guy that really has a shot.
Yeah.
You know, possibly Djokovic too, you know.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So, you know, there's that. I really feel like it's something that you know, he's been steadily improving. We all know he's got the work ethic, and he's just got the right attitude, Nima. He's there. You know, Zverev, you mentioned, I don't know. The whole thing was a little hokey. You know, all right, I'm going to donate my entire check if I win the tournament. Like, I don't know. I'm not liking this guy. I'm just not liking him at all. For whatever reason, it just seems, you know, I don't know. If you're going to make something like that, you're going to get the Australian public behind you, and then you donate 50,000 Australian. All right. You know, like, be like, I didn't win it, but for my fans next year, you know, here's 500K, whatever. You know, like, get your sponsor to match it. Do something creative and be creative. And I don't know. I think it's a nice gesture, but $50,000 is the first round prize money, Nima. I mean, all right, you know, okay.
Yeah. That's what I alluded to in our previous podcast, and it's not like I'm being hateful towards any player.
You know, like, whatever, it's totally, yeah, it's totally okay for, like, you know, all of the players, but he pledged that he was going to do, you know, 2.7 million if he won the tournament. You know, okay, you fell short. Everyone gets it. Like, whatever. You know, you can give a little bit more. I don't know. Whatever. It's totally his own choice. And then going to Djokovic, I mean, guy's the class champion. I mean, there's really no one. You know, I was hitting on the court last night, and one of my students is really improving. And so we're playing some points, and it gets to 9-all, we're playing to 11, and all right, so I went into my Djokovic mode in my own self, and I start to roll the ball a little bit heavier, and lo and behold, you know, American kid, 13 years old, you know, starts to punish the ball left and right, and then eventually gets impatient and misses. Well, that's what Djokovic does to everybody. You know, it gets to an important moment, and he just absolutely locks it down, and no one can really navigate their way through the Djokovic lockdown, and still, that's probably the number one biggest asset on the ATP World Tour right now, is Djokovic's lockdown mode is just not penetrable. We saw it with Federer at Wimbledon. You know, when he gets into that mode, it's just very hard to take Djokovic out.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, you know, I did a like a projection for the year-end number, you know, top 10. And I said that if Djokovic wins Australia and then he wins Indian Wells in Miami, and let's also make a asterisk here that in the last, you know, 2-3 years, he hasn't done well at both of those events. He loses pretty early in both of them. Then, you know, if he can somehow win those two, like he did earlier in his career, like 2011-12 stuff, I mean, for sure he's going to finish number one this year, because he's going to have enough points and momentum. Because right there, that's 4,000 points, right? It's basically half of what he has right now. And he did nothing at the U.S. Open, really. So, and in the fall, he was just coming back, and he was still a bit injured. So, and you know how he racks it up there. So even if he doesn't win Wimbledon, loses in the semis, I definitely think that he's going to do more at the U.S. Open. And it's looking good for him. I mean, I can tell you that at the moment. And it's interesting because, what does the, I mean, you know, we don't want to get too much into the GOAT debate because we're a little bit far away. It'll be interesting to see if Nadal wins the French, then he's at 20 as well, then how do we assess that? But if Federer does end up finishing number 3, Parsa, how funny is that going to be in a way? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, because for so long, like, Federer's 38 and a half years old now, right? Okay? He's still technically the GOAT. And, you know, you got these two guys who are, like, you know, 5 to 6 years younger than him, who are pretty close. I mean, Nadal is as close as can be, and Djokovic is looking like, you know, next couple of years he probably will get to 20 as well too. But if Federer finishes, I mean, if they all finish at 20, that would be kind of cool. But if, you know, like Djokovic gets 22 and Nadal gets 21 and Federer stays at 20, which realistically it looks like he's going to at this point, because it's just something, he comes in healthy, he doesn't play a lot, and then, you know, something just gets tight. It's just the nature of, you know, getting older, right? It's not his, it's not like it's his fault. He's doing everything he can. What would your thought process be on that here before we wrap it up for this week?
Yeah, I mean, he still takes advantage of younger players who don't really know how to handle his all-out aggression. If you I don't know if you saw some of the ESPN graphics or whatever, but they'd show his contact point, and he would spend, you know, 2% in the defensive zone, 40%, 50% in the neutral zone, and then the other 48% taking the ball early on the rise, you know, from a foot behind the baseline to 2-3 feet inside the baseline. So guys just don't know how to handle that. That's the anti of the way tennis is played right now. It's like the antidote. And the young guys just don't know how to handle him. So he can breeze through these matches, and he gets to the elite type of players, and then that's where it gets a little bit tricky. In this particular tournament, you knew he wasn't going to win because of the Millman match, and he just kept sort of finding ways to win, and there was just too much of a drain on his legs, and so it wasn't going to happen. But he is the third best player. Wouldn't you agree with that, Nima? I mean, there's no doubt about it that he is the third best player in the world right now. I just don't, and I don't see any sort of, you know, I think team probably will maybe get him, and maybe Federer will finish four this year, but he's still the fourth best player in the world. There's really no one that's sort of behind him that can really be consistent on that level. I think Stan maybe has a chance, but Stan's a little bit older as well. I think that, you know, Zverev,
how about Medvedev?
Just not consistent. Medvedev didn't impress me. You know what I didn't like about Medvedev? Let's be real here. He spent like his quote was, "I spent 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. hitting the ball all break long." What did you improve though? You know, I didn't see an improvement. I saw a guy who's fitter, who plays his game that much better. And this is where the mindset has to shift in coaching as well. And in the years past, and I don't want to say guilty of it, but I strongly believe in building one's strength versus working on someone's weakness. You use your strengths to minimize your weakness. And then once your strength is at a certain level, like these guys are on the ATP Tour, you have to work on those weaknesses because the best players can get there. And so, you know, you saw with what players were doing with Medvedev. They were using the chip. They were hitting the ball up the middle, not giving him the angles to spread his wings. And guys are starting to figure out how you can start to break down this guy. He needs to spend that 8-8 improving his game, not solidifying his game. Mm-hmm. And because he was already solid last year, you know, right? He was already a top bona fide top five player with exactly what he did. Okay, well, what's going to get you to the next level? It's not going to be doing much of the same. It's going to be being able to, once Djokovic or someone else figures out how to get you to play with your weaknesses, how you handle those weaknesses. And I just didn't see that. And hopefully he's home right now working, you know, 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. Yeah. Working on doing the weaknesses, you know, and learning how to manipulate the tennis to come back to his strength and back onto his terms.
Yeah, and I mean, I think for me, like, Medvedev definitely was a disappointment. He's got to get at least to the semis there. I think right now if team played against Federer, I don't know about in Dubai because it's a fast court, but I mean, as we saw last year in Indian Wells, he beat him there. In Miami, I think he would beat him. So for me, it's close. Definitely Federer is the third best player in the world, but team has a chance to be the third best player in the world after after Djokovic and Rafa. And it's going to be interesting to see what Rafa does, because so far it's kind of gone to what I said. I said that he's not going to play as well in Australia. He made the finals last year. That came true. He lost in the quarters. I definitely think you'll have an overall better clay court season. I mean, Wimbledon, he lost in the semis. Maybe he gets to quarter semis. It's definitely going to be fourth round to quarters if he plays. And then U.S. Open, I don't think he's going to win it. So maybe he makes semis. But then that means that, but he could also clean up the clay court season. So if he does that, which is not that easy, especially now that he's going to be, what, 34 in May, then that'll kind of offset everything, right? Because there's a lot of points to get in those 6 weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see how everything develops. Obviously, as we said, we're getting ready to, you know, descend onto Indian Wells in Miami. So that'll be fun. And so I'm looking forward to it, man. And, you know, Parsa and I will obviously be back in about 5-6 weeks to preview the BNP Paribas Open. Any closing words, Parsa, before we wrap it up for this week?
Definitely looking forward to the hard court and getting onto the American swing. And I felt like it was a really interesting tournament. Can we talk one more thing, yeah. Nima? I have to get your take on the super tiebreak in the fifth, or late in the third for the ladies.
I think it's good. I enjoy it. I mean, I think, like I said, maybe they could have extended it to 10-all, 12-all, get a little bit more drama in there. But, I mean, it's kind of cool that all four majors have something different to end it off. So, for me, you know, I'm all for it. I don't think it's a hindrance or it devalues the Australian Open in any way. I think, if anything, it makes it, a unique in some capacity. And I'm cool with it. How about yourself?
Finality was nice to have. I just felt like you can kind of feel players playing towards the tiebreak, you know, and not really, I don't know, you know, they just knew that there was this sort of, it's a kind of a mindset shift. Like, it's not all out every game. It's sort of like, all right, 30 love, the guy's up. All right, you know, like, sort of just, you know, you got a lot more deflating type of fifth set action. Mm-hmm. Instead of drama back and forth. I don't know. That's my take on it. Maybe I'm wrong, but we saw so many of them. It was like insane. But I definitely like it better than it going on endlessly. Mm-hmm. But I wish there was just a, I don't know. I was clamoring for a little bit more excitement. Maybe I was a little bit disappointed with this year's Australian Open.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I thought it was okay. I mean, Federer obviously had those Houdini acts against Sangrin and Milman. And then, I mean, he didn't have anything left against Djokovic, went down in straights. So we'll see how the rest of his year goes, how much longer he intends to play. I hope he keeps playing. I don't think he's going to win any more majors. I think he's done. Unless something really happens in the draw where he plays Zverev in the finals of Wimbledon, which is, I mean, I'm not saying Zverev can't play, but like something like that happens. Because if it's going to be Djokovic, he's not going to beat him. If it's going to be Rafa on grass, he might beat him. But you never know. So we'll see. I mean, it's a long year ahead. Still got three majors, all of the Masters 1000s, ATP Finals, as well as a ton of action on the ladies' side. So it's going to be fun to see. Parson and I, like I said, we'll be back in about 5-6 weeks to preview the BNP Paribas Open. In the meantime, you can follow Parsa at Parsa Sammy, myself at On Mars on Instagram and Twitter for both of us. You can check out all the action for this month on tennisconnected.com and download this podcast on iTunes as well as Android. Parsa, once again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, buddy.
And thanks everybody out there for listening. Drop us a line if you want to hear anything else from us. Be good, enjoy February, and we'll speak to you closer to spring.